Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, making his return, Harris Wishard, and regular guest, Jonathan Ibrahim. What's up, guys?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back again. Let's talk about some NBA playoffs.
What's up, Nick? What's up, Jonathan? Great to be back. You know, had some things get in the way, you know, family first and had to take care of some things. But it's great to be back on the pod and excited to talk what has been, for lack of a better term, non-competitive for the two best teams in the league.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Before we get started, make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Also hit that subscribe button. But let's start with the massacre last night. The Cavs put a beat down on the Celtics, 130-86. This game was over at halftime. They had a 40-point lead. And what were you guys' thoughts on this?
I couldn't believe it. I thought I was dreaming watching that game last night. I didn't think it was real. It was like watching the Monstars against the Looney Tunes. It was really bad. I never would have expected the Boston Celtics to get beat that badly by any team in the NBA. So I was more shocked than anything.
Yeah, I mean, this is a gritty team. They usually are known for coming back in games and keeping it tough. And, you know, they got beat down in game one, so you expected a better performance in game two. Harris, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I just want to send a memo out to the rest of the league that I don't think you should comment on LeBron at all in your pressers, in your postgame, in your pregame. That actually was, like Jonathan just said, a little Monstar-ish performance in the first half, capped off by J.R. Smith's over-the-head shot at the buzzer, which I think put them up like 41. It was incredible. And the Cavs have been, you know, nothing short of spectacular for the entire playoff. And it's amazing to kind of watch what's going on right now with them and, you know, and how they've played, to erase not only home court in game one, but kind of, Nick, we were talking about this yesterday. The Boston Celtics fan, I've never seen this before. The Boston Celtics fans were conceding the series last night.
Yeah, the Let's Go Celtics fans.
Yeah, they conceded the series in game two.
I think they know what they're messing into King James. Jonathan's been tracking that on OTG with LeBron Watch, so check that out. But the Cavs last night, they set or tied 7 records. Largest win of LeBron's career, largest halftime lead in an NBA playoff history, worst home loss in Celtics playoff history, worst loss by one seed in NBA playoff history, largest win in the Eastern Conference Finals history, largest win in Cavs playoff history, and a 13th straight playoff win for the Cavs carrying back to last season.
It's phenomenal. They've been phenomenal. It's unreal how good they've been. And I understand that the competition level isn't too great for Golden State and Cleveland, but there's still some talent on that Celtics team. Avery Bradley, Al Horford, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, you know, Marcus Smart. There's a lot of talent. They have one of the best coaches in the NBA, and they looked like a high school team playing against an NBA team last night.
Yeah, and it was interesting. You know, the Celtics seemed like they tried to come out with a little bit more energy and play physical, but it did absolutely nothing. The Cavs were able to get in that rhythm right away, and they just, when they're moving the ball they did early in that game, it's just like almost impossible to stop with the offensive talent they have on that team.
And their first half defense in this series has been unbelievable. I can't remember a time where the Cavaliers played such lockdown defense. And now they don't. Granted, they haven't done it for the full game in either game one or game two. But their first half defense has been serious.
Yeah, they let up 31 points last night in the first half, which, you know, is a first quarter number in the playoffs this year. And I think one thing I've seen is just LeBron's been great on defense, playing that free safety type role. He also had one of his signature chase down blocks last night. So I want to hear you guys, you know, what you think about LeBron this postseason. Is this the best LeBron we've ever seen?
Well, I'll take this one first. He was left off. James Harden was, you know, the unanimous selection for first team, and LeBron, you know, I'd like to. These people have to start revealing themselves.
Yeah, I think they will reveal the vote soon.
Who left him off the first team? And then we know he wasn't a finalist for the MVP award that they announced yesterday on TNT. I think he relishes in this role. He loves the fact that there's some doubt. You know, Curry, the unanimous MVP last year, being down 3-1. I think in the last few years, this idea that, you know, he's coming out of his prime, this, you know, other younger players that are MVP candidates. So this disrespect that he feels, whether it was Barkley when his team was struggling in the regular season, there's this like disrespect, I think, that he pays attention to pretty much everything in the media that allows him to kind of stay motivated and get to the new level that we're witnessing right now.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the best LeBron James we've seen. I mean, we've seen him better for a game at a time, but this is definitely the most consistently great LeBron we've seen in the playoffs. I don't remember him putting together a three-series stretch like the one he's had this year. Now, granted, he's played tougher teams in the past, and this year there really wasn't that one team that you could kind of look to say, okay, they're going to give them trouble in the playoffs. I kind of hoped that the Raptors would get their chemistry together in time, and we all saw how that went in the second round. So, it hasn't quite been there this year, which has led to a lot of critics saying that the competition that LeBron's faced in his career is, weak for most superstars. But I do think this is the best stretch that he's put together.
And the efficiency's there. He's hitting the three-point shot. And I just watching the Cavs is just a lot of fun, watching that offense and just all the weapons they have. Kevin Love's also started to play great. But let's talk a little bit about the Celtics side. You guys mentioned this is a disappointment. This team has talent. And their star player last night, Isaiah Thomas, 2 points, 0 of 6 from the field. He only played 18 minutes, didn't play the second half. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's really easy to get on as a bad performance, but I think a lot of us have to remember the fact that he's 5'9", probably in his basketball shoes. And there are going to be games where his size disadvantages are just going to take him out of games. And this is one of those teams that have that are going to cause a problem for Isaiah. They're long, they're athletic, they've got 4 or 5 different looks they can give him. I don't put all the blame on Isaiah. He's when your best player, your best scorer is 5'9", there are going to be nights where the offense isn't clicking, because if you're playing through somebody that small in the NBA, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. And I think that kind of leads to the next point, is like, you know, the Celtics probably do need to make, they need to make that move to add that other player. If that's the draft, trade, you know, we'll see what happens.
If I'm the Celtics, I do everything I can to get Jimmy Butler.
Yeah,
I know. Gordon Hayward would probably be an easier option for them. But if it's me, I'm looking at Jimmy Butler, saying he's the only guy I'm willing to kind of mortgage the future for out of the three possible guys that they were looking at: Paul George, Jimmy Butler, and Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, especially with Paul George, you know, only having a year left on the contract, and saying that, you know, it's been rumored that he wants to go to the Lakers, so it's too much of a risk. And Butler seems like he'd be a nice fit there. We'll see what happens this offseason. But let's talk about the Western Conference Finals, Warriors and Spurs. This one has not – it's looked like it was probably going to be a good series up into the third quarter of Game 1, because, you know, the Spurs had that big lead. But, you know, Kawhi went out, the Warriors came back, the Warriors dominated Game 2. Is this series over as well?
Yeah, I mean, for me, that series really ended with the Leonard injury. And, you know, whether it was intentional or not, we can go back and forth – you know, for days about, but, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, Pop was upset about it. So that's where it kind of, you know, put up a red flag for me, because you don't really see him attack individual players like that. But I think Golden State after that, you know, with the blowout that they had, the 36 point blowout they had, they're in prime position now to put this thing away. And I know Leonard is probably a game time decision for Game 3, but I think in this situation, is Leonard going to play or not? If he's not, then this will probably be over in 4-2.
Yeah, I think Leonard's status is still up in the air today. You know, obviously with the Spurs, they're going to make us wait until the last minute. But, Jonathan, you think this series is over as well?
If Leonard plays, there's a chance that they could push this series a little longer. It depends on the health of that ankle. It doesn't look good. And if he's not 100%, it's over. So he's got to really come out, play hard, and put together, dare I say, a LeBron-like performance to get them back in this series. But it really doesn't look good. And the Warriors aren't the type of team to relinquish leads, right? I don't remember a time where the Warriors have given up a playoff lead.
Yeah. Except at 3-1. But
Leonard's not going to be 100%. It's going to take – some monumental defensive efforts and a lot of things to go their way. And I haven't seen indications of this clamping D. You saw it at times, obviously, in the first half of game one, where it was, man, the Spurs might have, you know, a shot here, up 25 in the third quarter and getting great contributions from their bench. But, you know, it just sometimes it's hard to recover from the momentum of an injury like that. Even though they played well on the road in Houston without Leonard, obviously this Golden State team is a different beast.
Yeah, I think their confidence is just shook. You know, you lose Leonard, you're up 25. You think that you probably should still win that game, you know, at least hold on to the leader. But they did not. They blew game one. And then they get beat down in game two. And I mean, we all know that the Warriors are just a better team than the Spurs. So it's tough.
Another important part to do with Kawhi's injury is that when Kawhi sits, the Spurs don't have somebody big enough to defend Kevin Durant. Kawhi's really their only good matchup with Kevin Durant defensively, because when they switch him out, usually it's a guy like Jonathan Simmons that comes in, and he's way too small.
Yeah, that's a problem that a lot of teams have. I've even seen like Aldridge on him on some possessions. It's a matchup problem that a lot of teams have. It when a defensive player of the year goes out, you talk about how prolific he is on the defensive end. Durant has become such a matchup problem for everybody, but just when Leonard goes out, it makes it nearly impossible for them.
Very true. The matchups have been definitely something interesting in this conference finals. You know, the switching, we've seen a lot of teams switch at ease, especially not as much with the Celtics last night, but in game one, they were just like switching Kelly Olynyk and Al Horford on them, even when they weren't even great picks. So I think that's like something teams need to look at going forward is like, yeah, it does make sense to switch in a lot of situations. But if you're putting like LeBron James or Kevin Durant on a four or a five, like obviously they're going to have a matchup advantage.
Yeah, I don't think the Celtics need to be switching on LeBron James. I can understand it. I can understand switching on guys like Kawhi with their shooting, but with LeBron James, I mean, you're putting him on a guy like, or putting Kelly Olynyk or Al Horford on a guy like LeBron James is asking for trouble.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to ask you guys, who has faced the tougher competition so far in this postseason, the Warriors or the Cavs?
Harris, I'll let you start on this one. I want to think about this a little bit.
Who has faced the tougher competition so far, the Warriors or the Cavs? The Warriors, but it's not by a wide margin. We know that the Warriors, I think the tough thing about this is that in the first series on – you know, that they played. There's just been injuries everywhere. I don't want to call them lucky, but they have, you know, the benefit of in the second round, we know about George Hill. And then we know about obviously Leonard in this round right now, but I think they would have swept anyway. I don't think, you know, any of these teams would have really given them a strong series, but I think the injuries have, you know, these teams at full strength, I mean, it would be clear who the tougher competition was. But don't slight the Indiana Pacers, who, you know, gave a clear – I mean, it's tough. These teams haven't lost games. I think you're picking at stuff. You know, you're reaching for straws here, and there's just not much there. But both teams have been so impressive. I think I would give a slight edge to the West, but it's not by much.
What about you, Jonathan?
I'm going to say the Cavs have played the tougher opponents. Like you said, Harris, Portland had Nurkic out, Utah had George Hill out, and now the Spurs have Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that's a starter on every team, and that's you know, 20% of the best five players of that team. So I can't say that they've had a tougher competition. If those teams were all healthy, yeah, I'd have said the Warriors played tougher teams, but Indiana, they're a tough team. They played them hard. George Hill was great in that series, if you remember. And a lot of those games came down to the line. Mm-hmm. Toronto is another tough team, you know, defensively. They didn't look it in that series, but, I mean, a lot of people forget that, you know, two of those games were not that big of a blowout. You know, they were fourth quarter meltdowns by the Raptors, but, I mean, they played them tough for three quarters.
Yeah, it's a really tough decision. I think if you look at it, if you go like side by side, if you go Pacers versus Blazers, I think the Pacers might be a little bit better because they were fully healthy. Obviously, the Blazers were missing Nurkic. The Jazz and Raptors matchup is interesting. Lowry missed a lot of that series, and Jonathan mentioned, you know, the Raptors just weren't clicking. I'd probably give the edge to the Jazz. And then it comes down to this series right now. If Kawhi comes back, I think you give the edge, you know, to the West because the Spurs are still better. But if he's out the whole series, I think the Celtics are a little bit better team. But there probably is some argument about are the Kawhi-less Spurs better than the Celtics? Like, could you imagine the Spurs last night getting beat by 40 by the Cavs?
No.
No, didn't they get beat by 36 or something by the Warriors?
But I would say it wasn't as much in the fashion. I think the loss that the Celtics had last night, being down 40 from the second quarter on, is pretty bad.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? Let's address the elephant in the room, because for 40 years, dating back to the history of the league, it's been a dominating two or three, four or five teams that have had an opportunity to win. But this year obviously feels exaggerated. We haven't seen teams rip off as many wins in a row as this, both obviously talking about the Warriors and Cavs. We kind of expected round three to occur, but the knock on the league now is it's boring, it's not competitive, this playoffs have been a waste of time. You're hearing all this negative stuff. Now, obviously, if you're an avid fan, you'll watch no matter what. But, I mean, the anticipation, the lack of drama has turned the casual fan off, and it's kind of made for what has been maybe a disappointing playoff.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like us big NBA fans, we're still going to enjoy it. But I could see how people might complain about it. And, you know, everybody's saying, you know, Cavs-Warriors finals from the get-go. And that obviously looked like it's going to happen. And, you know, Harris, you know, you and I have talked about this. If both teams were to go to the finals with no losses, it definitely is a bad look for the league.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like you had said, like I'll tune in, but it is slightly bothersome that none of these teams could even potentially be challenged at all. I mean, there have been several blowouts, and you just would like to see more competitive games. And we both discussed that Houston would have given Golden State more. I like that matchup better, and also I think Washington would give Cleveland more. I would, if I had to choose what I would like to see in the conference finals, those two teams would be it. So I think the NBA got a little unlucky there. But as long as the end of the movie is good, and I've heard a lot of people say this, as long as the end of the movie is good, you could put up with the fact that the first hour and a half sucked.
But yeah, Jonathan, what do you think about this? You think both teams are going to end up going to the finals, you know, undefeated, and how do you think that looks for the league?
It's hard to say. Kind of like Harris said, I think a lot of people want you know, the trilogy. And I think looking back, it's going to be an outlier of a year. I don't think this is going to happen, you know, year after year. It wouldn't be the first time we've seen a team dominate, you know, like this. I think it was like the 2001 Lakers lost one game the entire postseason, right? They lost to Philly in five in the finals. And they swept all three of their matchups before that. So it wouldn't be the first time we've seen a team. It would be the first time we've seen a team from both conferences that are that dominant. But I don't think it's bad for the league. I think these types of rivalries are good for the NBA. The Celtics and the Lakers in the 80s, they didn't have much competition. Well, the Celtics had a bit of competition, but the Lakers had no competition in the West. And we look back on that generation as the golden era of basketball, right?
Yeah, and like Harris had mentioned, at the beginning of the movie is not great, but the ending is really good. Like, we expect the Cavs and Warriors finals to be really good. Like, especially from what we've seen from the Cavs going into the postseason, I can say firsthand that I just believe that the Warriors are going to win. Now I think there's definitely some question, and I'm expecting a better finals than I originally did with the way that the Cavs are playing.
Yeah.
Who do you think is playing better right now, the Cavs or the Warriors?
I'd say the Cavs look better, but it could be because of their competition. The Cavs, you know, they did have that game in Indiana where they went down by 26, and then LeBron James happened. But other than that, they've looked dominant in just about every single game they played. And again, it has to do with the competition. You know, a couple of teams out in the West, they're a little bit tougher defensively, and they don't allow the Warriors to score the way that the Cavs have been scoring. But I think the Cavs have looked better, but I think individually, the guys on the Warriors have looked a little bit better than individual guys like Kyrie and Love struggled from time to time.
Yeah, I've recently been more impressed with Cleveland, but that's no knock on the Warriors. But I joked with you yesterday that you know, they might as well just have started this thing in April and played a best of 27. They're just too, like, it's just too hard to take, you know, or to just say that one team's been better than the other comparing the conferences. Both teams have been clicking on all cylinders. They've got some breaks along the way, but it's a collision course that we're all anticipating, that we all look forward to. And, you know, it's going to be incredible to watch again for the third straight time. But I think it's too hard to say, well, this team's been better, that team's been better. Like Jonathan just talked about, the competition that we've tried to compare, that we love to compare. It's going to come down to, I think you would expect a 6 or 7 game series from these two teams. And like I said before, the beginning of the movie has not, the beginning and the middle have not been what we've expected, but the ending should be what we've expected.
What do you guys think about, you know, who needs to step up from the Warriors? Who needs to step up for the Cavs for the next round, you know, for the championship matchup? Who's not playing to their standard and needs to get to that standard if their team's going to win?
Believe it or not, for the Cavs, I think Kyrie's that guy. I think Kyrie has kind of, you know, been comfortable coasting so far in the playoffs. He's had some flashes of, you know, typical Uncle Drew greatness, but for the most part, he's been quiet. And it could be because of how great LeBron's been. We just haven't noticed him as much. But I think in order for them to beat the Warriors, they have to be the two best players on the court.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that point. Kyrie hasn't been like very like consistent. You haven't seen like back-to-back 30-point games, like a ton of stuff like that. Like you said, he's flashed, you know, the great plays, the layups, the dribbles, you know. So it'll be interesting to see if he takes his game to the next level. What about the Warriors?
Well, I think sorry, Jonathan, you go.
I was just going to say, for the Warriors, it's always going to be Draymond Green.
Yeah, I agree.
I think someone for the Warriors that needs to step up, though, you could point to Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
He's somebody who's kind of been a little bit cold, and he gives him that another scoring threat. So Curry has been good. He's been great in the Western Conference Finals. Hopefully he can carry that into the finals. We know what KD can do. Klay Thompson's had some bad games. It'd be nice to see him get hot. And I think for the Cavs, too, is Kevin Love. You know, when Love gets going, it just adds the other element. And when LeBron, you know, LeBron makes a point to get him some easy baskets early in the game and get that chemistry cooking. And when he just seems aggressive and, like, ready to go, that matchup between him and Draymond Green at the four could be really interesting.
Yeah, Kevin Love looks like the youngest brother that was, like, finally accepted into the family. It's like, finally, he said, okay, Kevin, you could be friends with us now. And he's in the post-game pictures, and he's making his threes now, and he's 30-10, and he kind of reminds you more of the Minnesota Kevin Love than the first couple-year Kevin Love we saw in Cleveland. And, I mean, like we spoke about before, and several times in the pod, I think he's had to have made friends with Chris Bosh. I mean, he's had to have discussed how to kind of fit in with the big three and how to take on the lesser role. And he's kind of looked like he's thriving and playing the best basketball, and he's made the good decision to stay. But like you mentioned with Clay, I think it's interesting to see how he's going to come out after what you could maybe call an All-NBA snub, possibly. As we know, the All-NBA team came out and Klay Thompson's name was left off. He was a two-time third-team guy the last couple years, and his name was left off.
Oh, well, Harris brings us to our next topic. All-NBA team was dropped. We'll talk first team first. We'll go by each team. First team, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Anthony Davis. Any issues here?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have had Anthony Davis on the first team. I probably would have had Kevin Durant, but it's not a big enough difference for me to be upset with Davis being on the list, but that would be the only correction I'd make to that one.
Harris, what about you?
You can make the argument for Durant over Leonard, but it's not a big enough one for.
No, he said Anthony.
I know. I'm saying, as far as me, I'm looking at Leonard and Durant and seeing, you know, it's tough to take Leonard's name off that list, but you know, being that he's been, you know, how special he's been on both ends this year for them, and what he's meant to their team. But yeah, I don't necessarily have any big issues with it. I'm surprised about, I mean, I know this is going down a little along the list. I'm surprised about Carl Anthony Towns, but as far as the first team goes, no. I don't know any other centers. Like, I know you could kind of consider Davis a power forward, but I can't think of any centers that deserve to be on the first team.
Some people had mentioned Rudy Gobert. Do you think that has a case? Or?
Yeah, maybe. I know, is Gobert's season that much better than Anthony Davis's?
I think the one great thing for Gobert, I think like his offensive rating and defensive rating were like top three in the league in both categories.
Yeah, no, he's definitely versatile and gets it done on both ends. And, you know, hopefully he's not known for the Steph Curry dance video going forward. And he needs to have he's got a bright future. I don't know. The only problem I have with the first team is LeBron not getting 100% of the votes. Other than that, I'm not like up in arms about anything.
It's kind of funny. Like, how could you possibly not put LeBron on first team?
Who are your forwards, though?
Yeah, like, who did you replace him with? I don't know. I
mean, Kawhi and Durant, you're going to make – like, it's just amazing that people have that thought process.
Exactly. But, Jonathan, you're cool with that? You think everything, like you said, maybe Durant over AD, but other than that, it's all good?
Yeah, I don't see any issue with the other four at all. Again, I'm not shocked that LeBron didn't get a unanimous vote, because it's been so many of those little things that happened over the years, like him missing out on the unanimous MVP when he was in Miami. You know, somebody voted in Carmelo Anthony. it's something always like that seems to come up in regards to LeBron. So I'm not all that surprised.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the second team. Isaiah Thomas, Steph Curry, KD, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Rudy Gobert. What do we like? What do we not like?
I probably would have had Jimmy Butler ahead of Giannis personally, but again, it's close. You could go either way with those guys. Other than that, Chris, with this one as well.
Harris, what about you?
With the second team?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, the Greek Freak is definitely deserving of where he was at. Some people project him to be, you know, a potential for a future first teamer, but this one I had no issues with. You want to put John Wall over Isaiah Thomas, I'm cool with that also.
That probably would have been maybe my switch right there. But other than that, like, I think it's a great, great second team. Those guys are pretty deserving. I think the one reason that Jonathan might have got the nod over Jimmy Butler is just like the impact that he's had and the fact that he led the Bucks in almost every stat. So
I don't have an issue with him being in the second team. It's just, in my opinion, after watching the first 82 games of the full 82 games of the season, Jimmy Butler was I think he became a superstar this year. Giannis is going to be a superstar, but this was Jimmy Butler's coming out year. They only got the eighth seed. But, I mean, that franchise was all over the place during the year. But throughout all of it, he was consistent. He put in some amazing performances. And I think he was something else this year. And that's the only reason why I would have put him there. But, I mean, you could interchange him. Same with Wall and Thomas.
Yeah, and, well, you made a good point with Butler. And he had some of those big games when they needed it the most, when they needed to get that eighth seed. He also had some incredible performances where he would have like a terrible first half and then really bounce back in the second half. I think he had a game where he scored like 30 plus in the second half. But moving on to the third team, John Wall, DeMar DeRozan, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, DeAndre Jordan.
Well, for me, I just think it's crazy how much these voters impact people's money, because I know that Paul George had the Supermax on his on the line here. And I think it's tough to kind of say who you take out. I think Clay obviously has a strong argument too, as far as him being on there over DeRozan. DeRozan did have a great year, but it's tough. You know, Cat, I would have put Cat over DeAndre, and I probably would have put Paul George on this list and maybe move Butler to the two. I mean, it's hard because George is kind of like a shooting guard, but they're both listed as forwards. But I think Paul George and Cat are two guys that I would like to have seen on this list.
Who do you take off for Paul George?
Well, it's tough because Paul George is technically a three, but I just see him so much on the perimeter as a two. And so I know he's at forward and you can't take Draymond or Butler off, but I think Paul George is better than DeRozan this year. That's just my opinion. But he's
Come on, man.
No, I think so.
I think DeRozan was, he had a more consistent season across the board. I think you have to remember Kyle Lowry is out a good chunk of the season too. if you ask Pacer fans, Paul George, the beginning of the year, he was really inconsistent. He did turn it on late and turn it on in the postseason. But I would stay with DeRozan here just for his consistent effort across the year. And we have to remember, what did he start the season with? You know, like those 37 straight 30-point games or something like that. So, and I think he kind of carried that team when Lowry was out and, you know, the issues.
Yeah, I'm just probably reaching for his choice. Yeah, but it just thinks that, like, he's just, his money is, like, you know, at the super max, all that stuff.
I mean, if he gets it next year, though, he'd still be eligible for it.
So, yeah, DeRozan averaged 27-5-4 on a team that won 9 more games. I don't think Paul George has an argument over DeRozan this year. You may be able to argue that he's the better player overall. He might have a brighter future, but this year, man, DeMar deserved probably to be on the second team. I can't take anything away from Isaiah because what he did at his height is phenomenal. And if you want to put him on the second team, that's fine. But DeMar was something else this year. And that's why I couldn't see the argument for Clay either, because yeah, DeMar played a lot better than Clay did this year in a more significant role. And, you know, like you said, Kyle Lowry missed significant time and he kept that team in the third seed. I don't know. I can't see an argument against DeMar. That might be the Toronto homer coming out, but I can't see an argument against DeMar.
But I think it also actually would be maybe the opposite of Toronto homer. I think it's just a lack of exposure for the Raptors, and, you know, there's not really a lot of hype around DeMar DeRozan. You know, yeah, he doesn't shoot the three ball. He's a mid-range guy. He gets to the line. You know, he's not like amazingly exciting to watch compared to some of these other guys. So I think, you know, that hurts his game a little bit. But like you said, I think Paul George is the better player, but DeRozan definitely had the better season. But I think
I might have been a little brainwashed from what I heard last night on Inside the NBA. So I didn't mean to offend any of the DeRozan fans there. But I don't know. It's just tough to, like, with Paul George and Cat, we can't agree on the
Cat one. I think it's your best argument.
The Cat one at the five. I mean, I feel like Cat is more deserving of DeAndre Jordan.
I don't even think DeAndre's, you know, would have got on the NBA fourth. I don't think he deserves to be on the NBA fourth team if it existed. Like, I don't think he was good enough this year to warrant that. I think Hassan Whiteside was better, but
I think you look at players like Hassan Whiteside and Cat and you say to yourself, you know, these guys can have an offensive impact. The only offensive impact DeAndre is having is pick and roll with Chris Paul and catching alley-oops. Where you look at Whiteside, you know, he's going to run the pick and roll. He has a few post moves. And Cat, you know, he can handle the ball. He can pass the ball. He can drive the ball. You know, he can kind of do it all offensively. Defensively, he's not at his full potential yet. But, you know, going forward, we know that he's going to be the best center in the NBA.
Yeah, I agree.
And then I want to ask you guys this. If you're the Lakers – and I know you're high on Jimmy Butler, Jonathan, but if you're the Lakers and you could have one or two players for the future, Paul George or Jimmy Butler, who would you rather have?
I think you go with Paul George just because the fact that he really wants to be in LA, where Jimmy Butler might be the better player. So,
Nick, I agree with that. I do think Jimmy Butler is the better player, but I think Paul George is more of he's a better fit for that Lakers lifestyle.
Yeah, he's from LA. He loves Magic. And, like, when you want to go somewhere, and, like, we already know that he wants to go there, it just seems like it makes it a better opportunity. And I think Jimmy Butler would probably be maybe a better fit with the Celtics. So I think it could work out for both guys. I think hopefully, like, personally, I'm the type of person that likes to see a ton of moves. And I think if Jimmy Butler and Paul George got moved, it would maybe help the NBA. You know, the Celtics would be better. They maybe could go 6 or 7 with the Cavs and not get swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. Paul George would help speed up the Lakers process, but I'm the Lakers. I'm just sitting on it. Like, I already know that he's coming to me in free agency. Like, why am I going to waste an asset on him if I already know he's going to come? It's not like we're going to compete in the playoffs next season.
Yeah, I agree.
But I mean, I could definitely see them making the move. Cause, you know, there always is the risk that he does sign the supermax with the Pacers. If he gets that, you know, all NBA team next year. And that does make a difference. But overall, do you guys see, like, personally, I think there's going to be a ton of movement this offseason because I think a lot of teams are going to realize, you know, we want to compete with the Cavs and the Warriors. We need to make a huge move. And if we're like one of those mediocre playoff teams, we need to just clean house because we're not going to compete with them. We just don't have enough.
It'll be interesting. I kind of see that happening or the opposite happening where teams go, look, we don't have a shot at beating this guy, you know, LeBron in the playoffs. Let's try and, you know, wait a couple years and we'll compete with Philly. We'll compete with Philly once they start to get good. Well, you know, that'll be the team we kind of benchmark against. But I mean, who in the East right now is even close to the Cavs?
Yeah,
I mean, we just talked about how big of a blowout last night's game was in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, what piece do they add for, you know, that to become a winnable game?
I think you look at the Celtics and you look at the potential of them adding two pieces, because I think that's what they would need to cut that gap. You know, they do have the assets. They could make a few moves with the roster to open up more cap space. And we know they have the number one pick this year, and they're probably going to have, you know, a top five pick next year. So I think they have other first round picks from other teams as well and young assets on the roster. So I think that really is a possibility of them maybe signing somebody in free agency and then also grabbing somebody in a trade.
So you don't think they hold on to that pick and kind of try and wait out LeBron?
It depends on them. You know, I don't know what they're doing. I could see that as a good, you know, that makes complete sense. You know, if you want to just build the dynasty and maybe even trade one of your players and get another young asset, like, and just move forward, because they obviously have plenty of young players. They're going to get hopefully a superstar with this number one pick, and they'll be set for the future. So they really have the flexibility to go either way, or they can kind of even do a little bit of an in-between. They could sign a big free agent, keep the number one pick, get a little bit better with their roster improving. You know, the Celtics really in the East are the only ones, unless the Wizards want to, you know, try to make a big splash move, but their assets really aren't great.
Well, Nick, something you had said to me was that you don't mind your team being necessarily bad during this stretch, because it would be frustrating to continuously have to run into LeBron in the East and what the Warriors have done in the West. So this slow process and this slow build, there's some patience, I think, because you don't want to end up, I don't say wasting a good team, but for the next few years, there could be that frustration of some of these teams that are with guys in the prime of their careers that might run into him. So there might be some owners and GMs that are a little bit more patient with the rebuilding process.
Yeah, no, I've said that to you before. I feel that way 100%. You know, if you're a young team too, like even a team like the Timberwolves or the Sixers who are just a few years away, you're kind of like, all right, we can catch maybe the Warriors and the Cavs at the end of their prime run, hopefully. And then if you're one of these rebuilding teams that are like starting from the bottom, like the Nets, the Suns, like I don't mind waiting 5 years for my team to be good, because at least when they're good, LeBron probably won't be as dominant as he is right now, and that Warriors team might be split up by then.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if, and you mentioned a couple of the teams, but I'll be shocked if the Timberwolves and Sixers didn't start to pick it up at least a little bit. But, you know, and like I mentioned, Kat and what I expect from him. But I think if it's with the Celtics with this number one pick, it's going to be interesting. I did want to ask you guys that also. I know this is kind of going into the draft a little bit, but does this performance in the conference finals dictate at all what they will do with their pick?
I think they already have a plan. You know, we don't know their plan. They could, like Jonathan mentioned, they could be the dynasty type plan where they keep the picks and they move forward and they just, you know, keep building this team to be a super house that's good for like 15 years. Or they can maybe try to speed up the process and move some of the assets. Or like I said, they could try to do something in between. It's really tough to say. I think they'll just stick to what their plan is. I don't think this is really going to change their mind.
You guys think about Boston trading that pick to Philadelphia for an asset and the third pick, because Philly said they want a point guard, and you know the top two prospects are both point guards. So I can see Philly wanting that first pick. Boston don't necessarily need the number one pick, right? The third pick's still a nice asset for them to either move or draft a nice player. I'd like to see something like that, and then, you know, that the whole Lonzo Ball going to Los Angeles question becomes a little bit less clear.
Yeah, no, that would be interesting too. I think that has been talked about a little bit of some movement up in those top picks, and you know, we don't have to just limit the two teams. We could see another team get involved, you know, pick up another asset that the Celtics might like, and then they still end up with a top pick and another very good player. Maybe not the superstar, but you know, like Jonathan said, another player that can contribute to this team. And they keep asking. It's going to be interesting. I think the draft could be really interesting trade-wise, especially we know about a lot of teams trying to clear cap space. There's been a lot of talk about people giving away picks with bad contracts. We know we have some terrible contracts in the NBA, some guys on the Blazers, Joakim Noah, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it'll be a really fun offseason personally.
And also just wanted to throw this out there. While we were, you know, recording, it's been announced that Leonard will not play in game 3.
Wow.
So there goes that series.
Yeah, and there's been some people saying that, you know, Pop isn't going to play Kawhi the rest of the postseason. That's how bad the sprain is, or just that he doesn't want to risk him getting hurt because he already knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, so in both series, I think the white flag has been raised, and it's just a slow death. Whether it's four in a tough in a unlikely scenario five, but both these teams will have the rest they need going into the finals.
Yeah, it will be fun. We'll definitely. I want to kind of give picks now, but we'll save that for the finals preview that we should be doing in less than a week now. So, but. It's been a great show, guys. And make sure, I know me and Harris were talking about it. You guys got to put your orders in for the Versa Climbers that the Cavs have been using. I know everybody's looking for those right now.
Yeah, no, I actually was on eBay looking for a good deal. Got to get rid of those treadmills, get rid of those stationary bikes. The Versa Climbers, the new wave. I mean, you want to be 32 and feel 22. You want to be Richard Jefferson and turn back the clock 10 years. You know, you want to be Amon Shumpert and Terrace. You got to get on that Versa Climber, man. You got it.
Yeah, they really need to get LeBron on a commercial. Like,
they go hard on those things, man.
And those things aren't cheap either. So
no, they're like $2,000.
All right, that wraps it up for today. As always, make sure you hit that subscribe button and thank you for listening. Harris, nice to have you back. And Jonathan, as always, thanks for hopping on with us.
Great to be back, guys. Take care.
Take care, guys. Thanks.